Hello, everyone. My name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your moderator for tonight's 7th COVID-19 telephone town hall meeting here in Mississauga. Joining me this evening with important COVID-19 and vaccination information is Mayor Bonnie Crombie, along with Dr. Lawrence Lowe, Medical Officer of Health for the Region of Peel, Michelle DeManuel, President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners, and Brian Laundrie, co-lead for Mass Vaccination Plan in the Region of Peel. City councilors, senior city staff, Staff Superintendent Sean McKenna from Peel Regional Police, and Chief Peter Dundas of Peel Regional Paramedics are also available to answer questions. Before we hear from our speakers, let me start by explaining how a telephone town hall works. Right now, residents from all over Mississauga are answering their phones and connecting to the discussion. You will have a chance to ask your questions of the mayor and our panel and to raise issues that you think are critical at this time. You can get in line to ask a question at any time by pressing *3 on your phone keypad. You'll then be put through to an operator who will take your question and put you in the queue. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your questions will be read out loud by me, the moderator. Our emphasis tonight will be on providing important COVID-19 and vaccination updates and hearing the questions residents want to ask the city and our panel. An audio recording of tonight's session, along with responses to frequently asked questions, will be available online. Here are a few things to keep in mind when you ask a question tonight. When using your phone to ask a question, press *3 on your keypad, and you'll be routed to an operator who will ask you to provide your name and the nature of your question. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your question will be read out loud by me. Please try to keep your question as brief as possible. There are a lot of people on the line, and we want to try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Please ensure your question is related to COVID-19. Finally, we understand that residents feel a lot of passion on this topic. We welcome your passion tonight. It means these topics are important to you. Please present your views in a respectful manner. In the event it becomes clear someone is not being respectful, we will end the conversation and move to the next available question. For those of you just joining, my name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your moderator for this telephone town hall with Mayor Crombie, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, Medical Officer of Health Region of Peel, Michelle DeManuel, President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners, and Brian Laundrie, co-lead Mass Vaccination Plan for the Region of Peel. We also have with us city councilors, senior city staff, Staff Superintendent Sean McKenna from Peel Regional Police, and Chief Peter Dundas of the Peel Regional Paramedics. It's my job to keep this conversation moving smoothly and to make sure we get to hear your questions and have as much discussion as possible. Before we start getting to your questions, I would like to invite Mayor Crombie and Dr. Lowe to say a few words.
Thank you, Jody. It's Mayor Crombie. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for our COVID-19 Teletown Hall. It has been nearly 2 months since our last teletown hall, and tonight we will be providing an update on the City of Mississauga's continued response to the third wave of COVID-19, as well as important information on our vaccine rollout. But most importantly, we want to hear from you and the questions that you have. I want to thank our panelists for joining us today, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, the Region of Peel's Medical Officer of Health, Brian Laundrie, the Region of Peel's co-lead for the Mass Vaccination Plan, Michelle DeManuel, CEO of Trillium Health Partners, our hospitals, and we have our entire leadership team here from the City of Mississauga on the front lines, including Paul Mitchum, Mississauga's City Manager, Darren Rizzi, our Fire Chief and Director of Emergency Management, and we also have many of our City Councilors joining us tonight, including Councilor Karen Rass from Ward 2, Councillor Chris Fonseca, Ward 3, Councillor John Kovac, Ward 4, Councillor Matt Mahoney, Ward 8, Councillor Pat Sato, Ward 9, thank you to each of you for being here with us tonight. Mississauga, I'm starting to feel a lot of hope again. And that's because starting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., all residents, and that's everyone, 18 plus, regardless of where you live in Mississauga or in Peel, you will be eligible for the vaccine. I'm going to say that again. Everyone, not just people living in hotspot zones. Everyone 18 plus living in Peel, hotspot or not, will be eligible for the vaccine as of tomorrow morning. All the information to book will be available tomorrow morning at theregionofpeel.ca/COVID-19 vaccine. Click on Book Appointment once you're there. If you cannot access the internet, please call the Region of Peel Vaccine Line for help in booking. That phone number, I'll say it twice, is 1-888-999-6488. Once again, 1-888-999-6488. And please remember that those 18 plus in hotspots are already eligible to book right now through the provincial booking system. I want to thank Dr. Lowe, Brian Landry, and all those involved for making the vaccine available to every adult in Peel who wants one. And I want to thank Dr. Lowe, Peel Public Health, and our hospital partners, Trillium Health Partners, for everything they have done over the past 14 months to help us navigate the pandemic and to keep our community safe. The reality is we couldn't wait any longer to make the vaccine available to every adult in Peel. We're home to 10% of Ontario's population, but account for 20% of all cases. Today's announcement gives us a clear path to getting every single one of our residents vaccinated. Dr. Lowe has assured me that new appointments are being added every day at our mass vaccination centers. It might take a little while to secure your appointment online, so we're asking everyone to please be patient when trying to book. I'm encouraging everyone to book their vaccination as soon as they can. Getting the vaccine is the best way to protect yourself, your family, co-workers, and the entire community. Please don't turn down the opportunity. The next available vaccine is the best vaccine. All vaccines are safe and approved by Canada Health. Once again, all residents 18 plus in Peel will be eligible for the vaccine starting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Over the last few weeks, we've seen a number of pop-up clinics roll out in Mississauga, targeting our highest risk residents and those least likely to get vaccinated at one of our mass vaccination centers. Peel Public Health is planning to launch more in the coming days, targeting high-risk residents, including one in Malton. But because we're using pop-ups to target specific groups, these pop-ups are not being widely advertised. This approach ensures that our most vulnerable are able to access the vaccine through pop-ups while offering a smooth and very efficient option for the general public at our five large mass vaccination clinics. We have also seen employer-run clinics roll out at both Maple Leaf and Maple Lodge Farms. And two separate pop-ups are administering vaccines today at Amazon employees at facilities in Brampton and Caledon. I want to thank the province for announcing today that it will be partnering with Peel Public Health over the next month to set up even more workplace vaccination clinics across the region, including at Loblaws, Walmart, HelloFresh, Magna, Perlator, and Air Canada. Mississauga, we're moving full steam ahead on a number of different fronts to get to our goal of vaccinating 75% of the region's adult population. Last week's announcement from the province saw the government commit to sending 50% of all incoming vaccine to hotspot postal codes for the first 2 weeks of May. I want to thank the province for doing this. But we need to keep a steady and consistent supply of vaccine flowing to Peel, especially now as all residents 18 and over will be eligible for the vaccine starting tomorrow. I'm hoping the province will listen to its science advisory table and commit to sending hot spots like Peel 50% of the supply after the first 2 weeks of May. The faster we get everyone in hot spots like Peel vaccinated, the faster the rest of the province can return to the new normal. We need this to happen because despite all the great news on the vaccine rollout, Peel continues to be the hardest hit spot in the entire province. This week, Peel Region is averaging 348 cases per 100,000, down slightly from 363 a week ago. Mississauga is averaging 282 cases per 100,000, which remains the same as last week. It's been static. The real promising news is that it appears the curve is starting to bend in the right direction. Our hospitals, however, continue to see a flood of patients. In Mississauga, Trillium is dealing with 127 COVID patients, 27 in the ICU, and 18 suspected cases. Trillium is also having to transfer out dozens of patients to other hospitals across the province. And while other hospitals across the province are beginning to schedule elective surgeries, our CEO, Michelle DeManuel at Trillium Health Partners, is still weeks away from seeing that happening here. Trillium has, in fact, transferred over 500 patients since the new year. As surgical nurses are being deployed to deal with the high number of COVID cases as well. I want to quickly touch on outdoor recreation. I've made my views pretty clear over the last few weeks that I think the restriction on outdoor recreation should be lifted. This is also in line with the science table guidance, which specifically advised the province not to close outdoor rec. We know that the risk of transmission is incredibly low and that outdoor activities are essential to the overall well-being of both adults and children. City staff did not want to lock up the tennis courts or put barriers on our basketball nets. This was a provincial order and the city was obliged to follow. I'm hoping that the province will consider lifting these restrictions very soon, especially as the weather warms up and gets nicer, and as cases begin to plateau and begin to decline. Mississauga, I've never been more confident that brighter days are ahead. Please get vaccinated when it's your turn. Please continue to follow public health guidelines, and please stay healthy and stay safe. And now I turn it back to you, Jody.
Thank you, Mayor Crombie. I think we were expecting some remarks from Dr. Lowe. Dr. Lowe, anything you'd like to add?
Thank you, Jody, and thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you as well to everyone on the line, councillors and colleagues who have really helped us here at Peel Public Health navigate through this pandemic. Your leadership, your collaboration has been greatly appreciated, and we're very much looking forward to brighter days. I also want to take the opportunity to thank Mississauga and our residents here. I know, and I know we all know, that this has not been easy, living through an unprecedented human health disaster and really just trying to have measures in place to keep all of us safe and especially to look out for our frontline hospital and healthcare workers and also our vulnerable populations, particularly people who can't work from home and some of our newest and racialized members of our community. I want to share that I do share Mayor Crombie's optimism. Our vaccine rollout is going remarkably well, and with the announcement today that all adults over the age of 18 can book to receive vaccination in Peel, we are now better able to make the most optimal use of the mass vaccination system that continues to deliver doses throughout our community here in the region of Peel. With our partners at Trillium Health Partners and also our partners up at Brampton Civic Hospital, we are now doing nearly 15,000 doses a day and ramping up very quickly in the coming days and week to get up to 18 and almost maybe 20,000 doses a day, equivalent to the size of a full pre-COVID capacity Raptors home game being vaccinated every single day in our community. And because our community situation is unique, with the vast majority of our population throughout the region of Peel, 85% of the population living in a hotspot, every single one of those doses is going to a resident of a hotspot of a hard-hit area in Ontario. In essence, you can think of our mass vaccination clinics as really large pop-up clinics that have been serving a community that is certainly at risk. So it's for that reason I think Mayor Crombie has covered off a lot of other things around the aims of a mass vaccination, as well as our mobile program, which really aims to get the hardest reach populations that face significant barriers to accessing mass vaccination. But it's also with that hope and optimism, especially given that we are now at 600,000 doses delivered, 40% of our population covered, vaccinating at 1% a day of our eligible population and trying to get to the goal of 75% first doses, that the speed and the rate at which our vaccination program has been unfolding continues to inspire and continues to really engage. But it is very important to remember that the hope is fragile and still remains very, very much in our hands. As Mayor Crombie identified in her remarks, we are not yet seeing a consistent downward trend in this third wave, and our hospitals do continue to see significant demand both for hospital as well as intensive care. And it's for that reason that in the midst of trying to bring this third wave under control, while the increasing vaccination coverage promises better days that has been seen with other international jurisdictions that have gone before us, it is absolutely vital that we continue to limit our contacts as much as possible and to support those who cannot voluntarily limit their contacts on their own. So I would ask everyone on this call to continue making sure that at least for the next few weeks, until we have a consistent confirmed downward trend and we start to see stabilization in our hospital picture, we've all been here before. We know it's a matter of trying to stay home, reduce contacts, not meeting unless it's an essential purpose. And when you do meet, making sure that you're favoring the outdoors, wearing a distance and mask, and limiting duration of contact and exposure to only the most essential reasons. Please don't meet if you're sick. Please don't meet if it's not essential. Favor virtual instead. And the big thing is that while we have been here before and having come down on two other waves, we do know that this time is different. And the hope is that as we continue to diligently bring this wave down, we hopefully will start to get the vaccine coverage that levels of 75% in first doses that will really change the pattern of transmission in our community, as well as the hospitalization trends that will allow us to hopefully gradually reopen and loosen some of these measures with confidence. And finally, on the topic of those who cannot necessarily reduce their contacts on their own, I ask anyone here, if you are an employer, please consider having your employees work from home as much as possible. And in the event that any of them do fall ill, need to be tested, or have been exposed, please consider ensuring that they receive paid sick days in a manner that actually supplements and supports the welcome initiative that the provincial government has started in ensuring that they are able to access those as much as possible. So with that, I thank everybody for attending tonight. I'm looking forward to the questions and discussion. I thank everyone for their patience and their kindness as we work through this together towards what does decidedly look like more hopeful and brighter days. And I'll pass it back to you, Jody, to get us started.
Thanks very much, Dr. Lowe. For those of you just joining us, my name is Jody Shanoff. I'm your moderator for this evening's telephone town hall. I'm pleased to be here with Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie, Dr. Lowe, and Michelle D'Emmanuel from Trillium Health Partners, and senior staff from the City of Mississauga. Now it's time to go to our live questions for this evening. Just a reminder to callers tonight, you can ask a question and get in the queue by pressing *3 on your phone at any time, and you'll be put in a line to ask your question. Or for those who are joining us online, listening to the audio stream, please type your question into the comments section. Our first question of the evening was submitted online from Dawn, and Dawn asks the following. Regarding the span between doses of vaccines, we've gone from 3 weeks to 16. What are the chances that this span will be reduced from 16 weeks?
So Jody, it's Mayor Crombie, and I know that we have received a number of questions on second doses and the time frame, and of course it impacts the allocation and supply. But the best person to respond to all the questions, and perhaps Dr. Lowe, you could give a broader overview of second doses as well, is Dr. Lawrence Lowe. So I'm going to ask that our Medical Officer of Health respond to all the medical questions, and we'll start him off with this one. Thank you, Dr. Lowe.
Thank you, Mayor Crombie. Thanks, Jody, for relaying that question. So first of all, a primer on second doses. It really is about a prime and a boost. Essentially, what you're doing with a vaccination is you're training your immune system to recognize a potential infectious invader. With the first dose, you actually prime your immune system so that it is ready in the event that it ever sees or encounters COVID-19, that it will be ready to respond and to respond in a proportionate manner to address any infection. The boost is usually given as a second dose, and that is to help your immune system recognize it again and also just to confirm the immune response that has been developed. In general, the aim is to try to not to give those two doses too close together, because if you give the second dose while the first dose is still helping your body mount its immune response, then the second dose is ineffective. However, the reality is that beyond that, there is good real-world evidence to show that for the vast majority of the population, a second dose can be delayed without any ill effects, and that a first dose does provide significant protection, especially including almost 100%, 99-point-something% protection against severe disease, hospitalization, and death. And that goes for all three of the two-dose products that have been approved and are currently in use in Canada. So it's for that reason that I think the National Advisory Committee on Immunization made that recommendation. Certainly, it is different from the manufacturer's recommendation, but from a scientific perspective, it makes sense. And the idea is that if supply permits as it comes forward, then there may be a reduction of those dose intervals to ensure that people get their boost sooner rather than later. One last point. We do know that there are certain groups of people who do have challenges due to their immune system or their constitution where they are still getting doses on the recommended schedule from the manufacturer. And those include people who have solid organ transplants, people who may have blood cancers that affect the immune system, and also individuals who live in long-term care homes, as well as First Nations that live on reserve. So those people are still being stuck, kept to the product monograph as much as possible out of an abundance of caution. But for the vast majority of us, there is real-world evidence from Israel and the UK, which used a similar first doses fast strategy, that one dose does offer a lot of protection and does assist the community in getting to a point where transmission patterns and hospitalization trends can be impacted with a collective response. So thank you, and I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. A reminder to our callers who are listening this evening, if you've got a question of Mayor Crombie or our panel, please dial *3 on your keypad where you can get into a queue and ask your question live, or we can ask your question on your behalf. Our next caller, our next question is live from Kanan. And Kanan asks about age eligibility for vaccinations. Go ahead.
Yeah, so with the COVID impacting younger generation, and Pfizer and Health Canada has approved vaccinating age 16 and 17, why are we not vaccinating for that age group? And I also see that Halton Region is already vaccinating for 16 and 17 ages in hotspot, and also in the U.S. they have vaccinated for the age 16 and 17. Why are they not included at least in the hotspot area?
I'm going to start that one and then ask Dr. Lowe to respond. Kanan, thank you for the question. And the good news is that Pfizer today announced that their vaccine, Pfizer vaccine, is appropriate for 12 plus. So that's some very good news. A couple of the reasons we couldn't go to 16 years old is we were on the provincial system, which only allowed us to drop the age eligibility for vaccine when the province announced we could do so. Plus, of course, there were some supply issues at the time. But things are changing for us, and we're very pleased that as of tomorrow, 18 plus will all be eligible to be vaccinated. And Dr. Lowe, I wonder if you'd like to respond about 16 and 17 year olds. As we know, the younger people are being infected with the virus and facing some very severe symptoms as well. Dr. Lowe?
Well, thank you, Mayor Crombie, and thanks, Anand, for the question. It's good to really reiterate that while you are hearing of severe and very serious situations with individuals in the teenage years, the vast majority of data still supports that age, especially advancing age, is the biggest cause of severity. And so that's the first piece I would highlight there. While we do certainly regret and are very sorry give our condolences to a family that recently had a very tragic loss of a 13-year-old girl in Peel Region. The reality is that is still extremely rare. And the people that are actually still at the greatest risk are the working age population between 18 to 49, of which we have just opened slots available for people in the region of Peel. There is obviously an intent to get as many people vaccinated as possible. We do know that Health Canada has approved Pfizer for 12 to 15. The province has a pediatric table that's been set up that is looking at the 12 to 17 age bracket. And I will highlight that Halton is the only health unit in the province that has gone against provincial direction on that front so far and gone to 16. So every other health unit in the province is still at 18 in hotspots, and in fact is in 50 for non-hotspot areas. So I don't think we're that far behind. And I think we'll continue to wait at least to try to coordinate, because we do know a pediatric population is different from an adult population, and we will wait to hear what our provincial partners come up with in terms of guidelines and protocols. Thanks, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes live to us from Susan. Susan's got a question about virus transmission through people who have already been vaccinated. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi there. If I were exposed to the COVID virus, could I, a vaccinated senior, transmit the virus to my non-vaccinated daughter, son-in-law, and grandchildren?
That question should go directly to Dr. Lowe, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you for the question. This is for this reason, actually, and it's a very important question, the broader picture on vaccination. There's a reason why we still recommend people adhere to distancing and masking even after one dose. We do know that one dose is very effective and extremely effective against severe disease and hospitalization and death. But in terms of mild disease, it's definitely not 100%. It definitely ranges from, depends on the real-world data you're looking at, anywhere from 60 to 90% protective against mild disease. And we do know that COVID is still a disease that can transmit asymptomatically or with very mild symptoms. And it's for that reason we still recommend that even if you've only had one dose, especially at the community levels of transmission we have right now, please stick to the protocols and precautions. We still just need to get to that magical goal of 75% where we can hopefully start to see some changes in transmission. But for the meantime, there is still a possibility that you may, even if you are vaccinated, you may yet be infected with COVID. You may yet be mildly infected with COVID, and you may yet be able to pass it on to someone who has not yet received that protection. So thanks, and I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for that question. Our next question comes from Srikanth, and it was submitted online. Srikanth asks, do you anticipate the dates for the second dose of the vaccine to be advanced?
It's Mayor Crombie. I'm going to ask Dr. Lowe to respond. I think that will, again, depend on the supply of vaccine. Dr. Lowe?
Absolutely, Madam Mayor. And so this really goes back to what I was saying. Again, the goal is with the two doses to not try to give them too close together, such that the second dose isn't effective because the first dose is still working its magic. But in terms of what has been out there, first of all, there is a lot of really good evidence that one dose is very protective against severe disease, hospitalization, and death. And we also know from the real-world evidence with other countries that used first doses fast strategy, like the UK and Israel, that getting to 70%, 75%, they did start to see changes in their transmission and hospitalization trends. That's essentially what we're going for here in Canada as well. And of course, with increasing supply, I'm sure that our federal and provincial counterparts will revisit the extended dose interval as is necessary. Thanks, and I'll pass it back to you, Judy.
Thank you very much. A reminder to callers who are listening, if you have a question to ask the mayor, Dr. Lowe, or any of our panelists this evening, please dial *3 on your phone keypad, and we'll put you into a queue, and you'll be able to ask your question live, or we can read it aloud for you. Our next live question comes to us from Frank Sindardo, the president of the Mississauga Seniors Council, and Frank's got a question about essential services. Frank, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Madam Mayor, Frank Sindardo here. I have two questions. One for you, Mayor. Hello.
Ciao, Frank. I'm here. Let's hear you. Hello?
Go ahead, Frank. You're live.
We may have lost Frank, Jody, but I think we have
the
question.
What? I absolutely, and I'm going to read Frank's question, and Frank, if you join us again, we'll try to get you back into the queue. But Frank was asking, what are you defining as essential? Essential is what we need to survive, but stores like Amazon and Canadian Tire are still open. Can we offer the people taking AstraZeneca blood thinners, would this help reduce the risk of clotting? So two separate questions there, Madam Mayor.
Well, I think we'll pass them over to Dr. Lowe, but it is important to note that it is the province that made the decision as to define what is essential employment and what is non-essential. And of course, we face the task of enforcing that the non-essential stores remain closed and only essential are open. Dr. Lowe, would you like to respond as well, not only to the essential list, but also on the question of the AstraZeneca blood thinners reduce the risk of clotting?
Absolutely. I'll start with the second one first. So in general, the use of blood thinners following an AstraZeneca shot is not recommended because ultimately the rare side effect that occurs with the AstraZeneca vaccine occurs through a totally different pathway that is not touched by the use of blood thinners such as aspirin or warfarin or any of those. So the reality is you take the AstraZeneca and the recommendation is you should take the AstraZeneca because the risk, at least if you live in Peel, the risk of the rare side effect that has been talked about so much is very small compared to the risk of what happens in the event that you are infected with COVID and you are unvaccinated. And we do know that the context matters significantly here in the region of Peel. There is a high level of transmission throughout all three of our communities. And besides making sure that you're staying home and trying to limit your contacts as much as possible, it's also incredibly vital that at the first opportunity that you have to get vaccinated, you get a vaccine regardless of which product it is. On the topic of essential, this is the essential business list and the essential economic sectors are identified by the provincial government. And certainly we have previously asked, our chief medical officer of health to reconsider, revisit the nature of essential businesses that are allowed to continue operating. I can share that, of course, we did move to update our Section 22 workplace order a few weeks ago to move to expedited closure of workplaces with five or more cases in outbreak where those cases may have been reasonably acquired from the workplace. And so some of the key exemptions that we have put in those orders included things like schools and childcare, pharmacies, healthcare facilities, including vaccination clinics, shelters, first responders and emergency services, critical infrastructure like water and wastewater, telecom, transportation, energy, government services, and services required to maintain the health of animals, which is a parallel to the healthcare facilities, and then also just to catch all around other workplace premises exempted from closure by Peel Public Health. We know that there are many workplaces that continue to remain open in the region of Peel. That has essentially been what has driven some of our high levels of transmission throughout our community. And I think the goal with coming through with the Section 22 order was to really try to get ahead of the variants, which spread further and faster in workplaces that remain open. So I think it's a good point. Certainly revisiting the essential business list is helpful. I think at this point where we are in the pandemic with the vaccines rolling out and where we are hopefully starting to see a downward trend and can continue to implement the various measures that are in place and stick to the precautions to bring this under control, I wonder if that ship has sailed, but it's one that we can continue to monitor and continue to have a conversation about. So thanks, and I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for those questions. Our next question comes to us live from Chris. Chris is on the line with a question about vaccine eligibility. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, hello, Mayor and Dr. Lau. I'm asking a question. I'm in Mississauga. My son lives outside of Peel, but works in Peel 5 days a week in a manufacturing with over 600 staff. I don't see that his company has applied for a permit for all of them. He's worried about getting the virus and taking it back home to his family. Because he works every day, 5 days a week, right in the middle of Brampton, is there any way that he can be eligible even though he doesn't reside officially in Peel? Can he get the vaccine?
The vaccine. Chris, it's a great question. And just before we move on, I'm going to announce that Councillor Ron Starr from Ward 6 has joined us. Thank you, Councillor Starr, for being online. So this is an important question. We know that educators can live or work in hot spots, and hopefully now, if they're 18 plus, can be vaccinated. So Dr. Lowe or Brian Landry, one of you is better equipped to respond to people who may work in the region of Peel. Are they eligible to get vaccinated as well?
So thank you very much, Madam Mayor. I'll start, and then Brian, you can try to fill in if I miss any of the details. So in addition to the age-based eligibility, which we have opened today, which is 18 plus throughout the region of Peel for people who live here, there do continue to be people who are eligible based on provincially identified priorities, as Mayor Crombie has identified. So certainly teachers, childcare workers, all the healthcare worker classes that have been identified previously in phase one remain eligible to receive their first dose of vaccination at this time. And I think in respect of other occupations, we do know that the province is moving to open phase one occupations and phase two occupation, or sorry, stage one and stage two occupations within phase two in the coming weeks. And so that will also be, you know, honored through the provincial booking system when the province does open those occupations for people that live or work in Peel. Beyond that, anyone else that's not covered by any of those but may work in Peel certainly are being looked at as a potential priority, but are not necessarily covered in the recent announcement today. At this point in time, our focus is really to try to get vaccine to our residents who live here. That will be something that is constantly monitored. But we imagine that many of the highest risk occupations will be covered by the province's announcements around their additional prioritization for essential workers. Brian, is there anything that I've missed on that?
Thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thank you for the question, Chris. No, I think you've covered that nicely, Dr. Lowe. And the province has indicated that it will be moving down its eligibility for essential workers. So even those in the second group will be eligible next week, and we'll follow the provincial guidance on that, but expect that most workers who cannot work from home will be eligible as of May 10th, or the week of May 10th. Thank you, Jody, back to you.
Thanks very much. A reminder to callers, if you've got a question of Mayor Crombie, Dr. Lowe, or any of our panelists tonight, please dial *3 on your phone keypad where you can join the queue and have the opportunity to ask your question live or have it read aloud on your behalf. Our next question is live from Diane. Diane's got a question about the resumption of outdoor activities. Go ahead, Diane.
Oh, hello. First of all, I want to say you're my favorite medical officer, Dr. Lowe. my question is, it was already answered about outdoor activities, but I'm just wondering, is COVID officially airborne or not?
Dr. Lowe, we'll go straight over to you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your kind words and support. I mean, I would highlight that it really has been a team here at Peel Public Health, including Brian Landry, who I've spent many long nights on the phone with, and our mass vaccination team, as well as our ongoing COVID response and essential critical public health functions that give us the need to give us the strength to continue, as well as all of our counselors and our local leaders and our hospital partners that have really stood next to us as we've gone through this. So thank you for your kind words and support. In respect of aerosol, this is one of those really challenging questions at this point in time. And there is an ongoing scientific debate, because the trouble with droplet versus airborne is that it was a very discrete kind of classification that was initially created before the advent of COVID-19. And we have seen, for example, this is why indoor spaces have become such focus throughout the course of our measures. This thing spreads very easily in indoor spaces, particularly spaces that may be darker, poorly ventilated, and crowded with lots of human beings. So we do know that in certain indoor spaces where ventilation may be poor, it may linger as an aerosol, particularly if someone is sick. In other settings where the ventilation is better, then it does tend to behave more like a droplet, where it is falling within 2 meters of an individual's reach. So it's I think, as with any new disease and any new advance in science, this has really challenged the existing classifications and the, you know, like, is it airborne? Is it droplet? It really is, unfortunately, a spotted sort of animal that sometimes acts like a tiger, but on occasion can act like a cheetah. And so that, I think that's been part of the ongoing piece. But I think the key thing is really to stick to the measures that we've described, which is, you know, prefer the outdoors to indoors, because we know that transmission is reduced significantly in the outdoors. Make sure you're wearing a mask, make sure you're distancing. And if you're sick, even the mildest bit sick, make sure you get tested and you self-isolate so that you can stop the spread. And finally, make sure you're getting vaccinated as soon as you can. So thank you, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you very much for that question. Our next question is from Romina, came online, and I'll read it out loud. Do you think it is safe or advised to mix the vaccine types you get? Can you refuse it if it's not the same type? I received Pfizer and would like the second to be the same.
Romina, it's Mayor Crombie, and I know that that is currently being studied, whether you should have the same vaccine both or if you have more protection to change it. I know that that's being studied, but who is best equipped to respond to this is Dr. Lowe. He probably has the most current thinking. Dr. Lowe, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And in fact, I actually don't even have the most current thinking. I've got the most current update, which is I understand that the Federal National Advisory Committee on Immunization is actively looking at this question, and they will be issuing a guidance sometime this month, probably middle of the month, especially as we start getting closer to second doses. That is my understanding from our federal partners. So stay tuned.
Thank you. Our next question is live with Nancy. Nancy's on the line, and she's got a question about school resuming. Go ahead, Nancy.
Mayor and Dr. Lowe and Brian Landry and the entire council and the hospital partners. Just want to commend all of you, first of all, for a great job that you're all doing, and proud to be a Mississauga resident for the past 34 years. My question is regarding, I'm an educator, and would like to know if based on the, well, I'm sure based on the COVID numbers and the hospital numbers of people getting sick, I'm sure that you're not planning on having us go back to school soon, but if the numbers start changing in June, is it a done deal, or are we possibility of returning back to school?
Thank you, Nancy. It's Mayor Crombie, and I know that people are also eager to know if, from Dr. Lowe, whether school will return in September and will our children have to be vaccinated. So, Dr. Lowe, what's your thinking on opening of schools or reopening schools?
Thanks, Mayor Crombie. And I think there's two things that came out of Don's question and yours, which is what happens to schools this year and then what happens to schools in the fall. So let me tackle schools in the fall. You know, certainly, you know, the goal, and that goes back to the conversation we had around pediatric doses. We know 12 to 17 is being discussed at the province. We imagine there will be further approvals, maybe for younger children as well, based on positive trial data that may come out of other jurisdictions. So who knows what the fall is going to look like, and also the nature of getting back to school with immunizations and all those other pieces. The hope is, of course, that if we play all our cards right, that the fall, it won't look perfectly ordinary, but it may look like something that resembles a bit more ordinary than what we're dealing with now. That's the first piece I would say there, but I don't have a full crystal ball, and I wouldn't take that as a promise and commitment. I would take that as a slightly educated guess. On the topic of slightly educated guesses, in thinking around what happens with the rest of the school year. And I should have mentioned, Donna, I think you mentioned you were an educator, so thank you for all the work you've done. I can't imagine it's been a very easy year throughout the last little while. I know it's probably been one of the most unusual academic years, if anything. And the reality is that the measures that were in place to protect for in-person learning, they are effective at certain levels of case transmission. And the trouble is that we have so many different lines crossing through May into June. I don't anticipate that schools will return before the stay-at-home order, which pretty much wipes out most of May. But you now have the situation where vaccine coverage is rising, and it's rising at a rate of 1% per day in our region. We're vaccinating 1% of our eligible population every single day, which means we're at 40%. If you give it another 25, 30 days, the hope is we'll get, you know, if we stay at capacity, and that means everyone needs to do their part, then we get up to 70 or 75% pretty quickly. So I think that's the first thing I would say. You've got the line coming up with vaccine coverage. You've got the line coming down with trends. And you've also got, you know, just the timeline in terms of the school year and where it ends. So it'll be interesting. And I think it's really close to call right now because we don't necessarily know where the case count trend line is going to be. We don't know what the trends in the hospital are going to look as well. And we also don't necessarily know if we'll manage to get to the target of 75% first doses, in short order, which is why we need all of your help. And then once all those lines kind of start to get closer and closer together, that's where hopefully we'll start to see the question of really is the school year done or is there any opportunity to return school in some form, some partial, maybe even a partial reopening. That's all still up in the air because the trends are still quite unsettled at this time. So I know that doesn't really help for this, but I am hopeful that at least September we'll have some clarity on immunizations needed to attend school and hopefully a school year start that's a little more ordinary than what we've seen in the last little while. Thanks, and I'll pass back to Jody.
Thank you very much. We'll go to our next question. Sandy submitted this question online. Sandy says, the mayor mentioned there will be more clinics open to the public. When and where can we find more information?
Okay, I'll start that one off. And if I miss anything, Dr. Lowe or Brian Landry, you can supplement. But certainly the easiest and most efficient way to book an appointment is still at the Region of Peel's website, which is peelregion.ca/COVID-19 vaccine. Or if you don't have the access to the internet, you can always call 1-888-999-6488. And of course, as of tomorrow, we are booking 18 plus. Everyone 18 plus. We do have 5 mass vaccination sites, which are extremely efficient and well run. I've only heard praise from people who have gone through them, and they are at 7120 here, Ontario, that's north of Derry, 5500 Rose Cherry Place, which is our Paramount Fine Food Center, the International Center, the University of Toronto, Mississauga, UTM, run by Trillium Health Partners, and of course the Queensway's Trillium Mississauga Hospital. So those are where our mass vaccination sites are. Now, we are getting a lot of questions about the pop-up clinics and why Peel hasn't been rolling them out to a large scale to vaccinate 18 plus and older. Like we have heard and seen in the city of Toronto, and the simplest answer is we don't have the numerous hospital networks and systems like Toronto does. They have over 19 hospitals to deploy the resources needed to run those pop-ups at a very large scale. So the direction we received from the province was that pop-ups are to be used to service the most vulnerable, the most marginalized residents, those who will least likely go and get vaccinated at a mass vaccination center. And so that's what we have been doing. We have had 3 to date at MAC Islamic Center of Ontario, at the Brampton Islamic Center, and at Muslim Nexus neighborhood. That one was on the 29th. There will be a few more launched, but as I said, these are generally very culturally specific and to service the most vulnerable and marginalized people who are least likely to go to the mass vaccination center. There will be a clinic held in Malton on Friday as well. So these will be rolled out in the days and weeks to come. But usually the information, booking information, is not widely available because, of course, again, they're targeting a specific group and a specific demographic. So Dr. Lowe or Brian Landry, is there anything you'd like to add to that? The only other thing I'll say is we do have a number of workplace clinics being launched, and more were announced today, which was very good news, at Maple Leaf and Maple Lodge Farms and at Amazon. And also more were that will be run by the province in collaboration with Peel Public Health at Loblaws, Walmart, HelloFresh, Magna, Perlator, and Air Canada. So to Dr. Lowe, to Brian Landry, did I miss anything about more public clinics opening?
So, Madam Mayor, I think you're pretty comprehensive in your answer. All of our mass vaccination clinics, together with our hospital clinics, are open and available, clearing hundreds of thousands of appointments, well, 120,000, 150,000 appointments a week. Certainly using our mobile clinics as a means to reach our hardest-to-reach populations. And, of course, there's still availability through a primary care pilot and a pharmacy channel. But, you know, I'm going to give you to the expert himself. Brian, why don't you see if there's anything you can add on to what I think was a fairly comprehensive answer from the mayor?
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. And I have to say, Mayor Crombie, I think that was an excellent answer, and I don't think I could add any more detail to it. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question is live from Glenn. And Glenn has a question about vaccine rollout. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hopefully you can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Perfect. First of all, I'd like to start out by thanking Dr. Lowe. You continue to speak to us with confidence, which is reassuring. You've taken it on the chin hard a number of times. You've held steadfast in your position. And to date, and I see no reason for it to change, you've been proven right 100% of the time. Thank you very much. My question has to do with getting jabs in the arms. The region of Peel, like many other regions, has been plagued with vaccine shortages. Starting this week, according to the federal government, and running to the end of June, we're going to receive 2 million vaccines a week. And I don't know exactly where those are going to be distributed, but I'm hopeful that Ontario and the region will get their fair share. My question is does the region of Peel, specifically the city of Mississauga, today, as we speak today, do you have a plan in place to efficiently and quickly utilize each weekly shipment without building up inventory because you can't get jabs in the arm? And if that plan exists, what does it look like? How will you administer whatever portion of the 2 million vaccines you get on a weekly basis, okay? And
thanks for that question, Glenn.
I just want to say hello to Glenn Vokes. Thank you for calling in. And yes, we do have a strategy. And let me reassure everyone that we do not keep vaccine in inventory whatsoever. We only have enough for the appointments that are booked. And as you know, we are 10% of the population, yet 20% of the cases. So we had been expecting a minimum of 20% of the vaccine. But sadly, in the beginning days, we were not receiving even the provincial average. Things have changed. And we are now receiving for at least the next 2 weeks 50% of all the allocation of vaccine. We're very pleased about that, and we need that to continue. So that is the message that Dr. Lowe and the mayors from the Region of Peel will continue to advocate to the province to continue a steady supply of shipment of vaccine to our region. And Dr. Lowe, do you want to speak specifically what your deployment strategy is for the vaccine we have received? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Glenn, for your kind words again. It's a team effort here, and in the interest of keeping it a team effort, I'm going to pass it to the man with the plan, Brian Laundrie. Could you talk us through how we're getting through our allocation and maybe just confirm some of the numbers that Glenn has spoken to? Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thank you for the question. That's an excellent question, and we're excited to be able to respond, mostly in the positive, I think. Dr. Lowe has outlined in the last question how much vaccine we're moving through. So we're at 15,000 doses a day, moving up to 20,000 doses. And we are expanding our capacity in a number of ways. So first of all, additional capacity is being expanded by through the Peel Mass Vaccination Clinics, and our hospitals are also expanding their capacity. We're adding additional workplaces that are holding clinics for their staff, and that has been spoken about already. We are adding additional clinics to our existing complement, and those will be coming online within the next couple of weeks. We are also expanding our outreach through our pharmacies in terms of additional types of vaccine that are being offered in pharmacies, and hopefully also to the amount that pharmacies are able to administer. And likewise with our primary care partners, we've expanded our partnerships through those primary care sites, and have continued to bring on a number of new sites as the pandemic has rolled out, as our plan has expanded, and as vaccine has become available. Similarly, if we need to continue with those targeted mobile clinics than we will be for homebound and other populations that require that special touch and that are unlikely to visit one of those clinics. So we have that as another channel that we're expanding and broadening. And similar with the community pop-up clinics, community clinics, whether they're pop-up or they're specialized to meet the needs of those most vulnerable and specialized groups that require that personal touch. So we've got a number of opportunities to increase our capacity. Of course, depending on how quickly the vaccine comes up and down, it's very challenging to upscale and downscale. But we've done our best to build that flex into the system, and I know our hospital partners have done that as well. And I wonder if Michelle would like to speak to the plans at the hospital to do that as well. Thank you.
Brian, maybe I'll just again acknowledge the work that we've been doing together. I'd start by saying at Trillium Health Partners, the two sites that we are operating have been doing very consistently about 4,000 shots a day for several weeks now. Madam Mayor, as you know, sometime either on Friday evening or Saturday morning, we will have hit 200,000 shots at those two sites alone. And they were designed to do about 4,000 shots. We, with, along with public health, have been tightening our belt a little bit to see how much more we can do, and we hope by the end of this week we will have been able to maximize it at 4,700 shots, maybe getting to 5,000, and then those two sites will be maxed out. As the plan always was with Peel Public Health, the hospitals would have a very specific role around these two centers, and that Peel Public Health would run all the other mass vaccination centers and the mobile clinics and pop-ups. And of course, we're always there in partnership to support if there's additional work we can do to help Brian and his team. Over to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for those responses. Anyone who has a question for Mayor Bonnie Crombie, Dr. Lowe, or any of our panelists this evening are encouraged to dial star 3 on your phone keypad, where you can get into the queue to ask your question of our panel or have your question read aloud. Our next question is also live. Moses is on the line and wants to know about restaurants and patios. Go ahead, Moses.
Hi, Mayor. I'm just wondering, now that we know that outside transmission is not as as bad as indoor, would restaurants be opening any time soon in the near, like, the next couple months, the patios, I mean?
Moses, it's a great question. I'm so longing to sit on an outdoor patio when the weather is nicer as well. We have a long way to go. We really need to see a steady decline of cases and a change of situation in all of our hospitals. And of course, it is the province that makes that determination as they move us through the color-coded framework. Last time we were in the gray lockdown zone, and I expect that if they should lift the stay-at-home order, we would go back into the gray lockdown zone and make our way down to red, where we can have patios open and 50% capacity indoors. But it's a long way off. I don't know if Dr. Lowe or Brian want to comment on that as well.
Yeah, no, thank you, Madam Mayor. Thanks for the question. I think it's too early to say. I mean, I think our focus is actually on schools to some degree. As you know, they should be the first to close, the first to open and the last to close. And that was how it was done in February. Hopefully it would be the same that's done here, especially if there's any possibility of salvaging the last bits of the school year. Certainly restaurants, bars, et cetera. You'll know, for example, that the United States started their mass vaccination program in earnest back in December, January, and only now in May are some states that have similar climatic conditions to ours starting to emerge, most notably New York City, that is lifting a lot of restrictions starting from May the 19th. So if you go on a similar timeline where we started a few months after in earnest in vaccinating our community, you would probably be projecting into, as a pessimistic estimate, of course, into July. I know first and foremost, I know, and I have friends that have been heavily impacted by a lot of the closures and curtailments that have taken place during this pandemic. And my hope is, of course, that everyone out there will ensure they get vaccinated as quickly as possible, get us to 75% first doses, and then hopefully we'll let the magic of vaccination start to really change the tail of the tape here in the region of Peel. So thanks. I'll pass back to Jody.
Thanks very much, Dr. Lowe. Aggie submitted the next question to be read aloud, and the question is as follows. Will the province provide an ID card to verify people who've had a vaccine? Will there be regulations tied to this for services and events?
I'm not sure who the best person to respond to this is. Dr. Lowe, do you have any information? I have not heard that there will be any kind of vaccine passport. Dr. Lowe, Brian, or Michelle, does anyone have any information on this issue?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. I can give it a stab. Certainly at this point in time, the province hasn't indicated the use of a vaccine passport or green pass or green card of any variety for individuals who've been vaccinated. But we do know that there is precedent with vaccination records being used for things like school entry or as a condition of employment or training. So, you know, I think it's still an issue that is going to come about at some point, discussed. But for now, the goal is really just to try to encourage people as much as possible to get vaccinated because it is so vital, both for your own protection in terms of the fact that if you remain unvaccinated, there is still a risk that we don't necessarily know how your body would react to an infection should you be infected with COVID, but also to ensure that you're protecting your loved ones, your friends and family, and also your broader community, and quickly so in trying to get vaccinated without delay. So nothing just yet, but there is precedent, and to the extent that we are trying to get back to some semblance of normal in the future, I will be keen to see what sort of discussions arise in respect of vaccine records or certification as it pertains to COVID-19 vaccination. Thanks, and I don't know if anyone else wants to comment, or otherwise I'll pass back to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Our next question was submitted online from Bruno, and Bruno asks the following. If you were vaccinated in Toronto with AstraZeneca, can we book the second shot at a Mississauga pharmacy within the four-month period?
I think the answer to that is going to be yes, but Dr. Lowe, Brian, do you want to confirm, please?
I'll defer this one to Brian. I don't know if you have any insight into the pharmacy channel, because unfortunately that's run by the provincial government and the individual pharmacies, but Brian, do you have any insight?
No. So at this time, thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thanks for the question. We are expecting information on AstraZeneca and second shots, but this time we don't have any information on when more AstraZeneca is coming to the province. So we've, across the province, utilized most of the supply that's been here on first doses, but the second dose strategy is yet to be determined. Thanks, Jody. Back to you.
Thank you very much. Callers to our session this evening are invited to ask questions of our panel. You can do so by dialing *3 on your phone keypad, and you'll go into a queue where you'll speak with an interviewer, indicate the type of question you'd like to ask, and then have the opportunity to speak live with our panel or have your question read aloud. Our next caller is live. It's Tabitha. And Tabitha has a question about vaccines and pregnancy.
Hi there. So the question I had was, I'm supposed to have my COVID vaccine on May 18th, which is in 2 weeks, and I am pregnant. I was wondering if that would affect the baby by any means, by any side effects.
That's an excellent question. We'll let Dr. Lowe respond, please. But I know they're recommending that women who are pregnant be vaccinated. Dr. Lowe?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thanks for the question. First of all, congratulations, wishing you all the best with your pregnancy journey. In respect to the vaccination, risk is, the risks are theoretical, and there have not been any that have been identified in respect of the pregnancy itself. But there have been significant risks identified of pregnant women who do become infected with COVID. And so for that reason, I think there is a significant risk if you do remain unvaccinated, and I recommend that you get vaccinated in 2 weeks at your appointment, as has been scheduled, to ensure that you are protected. We have seen severe disease with women who are pregnant, and it's for that reason that the vaccination prioritization was to change to move pregnancy from an at-risk condition to a higher-risk condition to ensure that that women who are pregnant are able to access this protection. So please do get vaccinated. Do get vaccinated without delay. Thank you, and I'll pass back to Jody.
Thank you very much. Judy submitted the following question. Judy asks, if you have had COVID within the last 5 months and one dose of Pfizer, are there any concerns with not having the second dose?
It's Mayor Crombie. I just want to say that these questions are just excellent caliber and so diverse. And I'm going to pass them all on to Dr. Lowe because he's the right person to respond. But very thoughtful questions this evening. Thank you. Dr. Lowe?
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. And sorry, I missed the second part of that question, but is it someone who's saying that they don't feel that they need the second dose of Pfizer or just trying to clarify?
The people who have had cancer.
Oh, yes. Okay. And then if they've had cancer previously, just to whether the extended
dose. No, I beg your pardon. If they had COVID, not cancer, in the last 5 months and one dose of Pfizer, are there any concerns with not having the second dose?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. You know, there's always concerns because the reality is that we don't know. You can get immunity through the vaccine, and you can also get immunity through the disease. But one of the things that is clear is that the immunity that you get with the disease is waning. That's why we've seen reinfection with COVID-19. And it's for that reason that we do recommend that anyone who's had COVID previously still make sure that they complete a full two-dose vaccination schedule with the approved products that are available for them in Canada. Thanks so much. Now I'll pass it back to Charity.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Leanne is live on the line next, and Leanne has a question for Dr. Lowe. Go ahead, Leanne.
Good evening, Dr. Lowe, Madam Mayor. My question is, as a cancer patient, I had my first dosage in April, and I'm not supposed to go back for my second vaccination until August. And I was understanding that they're telling people who've had cancer that they should get their vaccination, their second dose, quicker. Is that true? And if so, how do I do that?
Dr. Lowe, this is over to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I think it's a very specific kind of cancer, and I would encourage you, you know, because it is important to make sure that you get assessed. And that also goes, I guess I gave my broad response to women in pregnancy and vaccine, but I encourage anyone with your specific individual situation, please follow up with your primary care provider or your individual provider to make sure that they're going through the various exceptions. There are certain exceptions for certain types of cancer, specifically, I believe, hematopoietic cancers, which are blood cancers that may affect the immune system, but not all cancers, I believe. And so I would encourage you to follow up with your primary care provider to discuss your specific diagnosis and should you qualify for an exemption to ensure that you pursue that, you book that and pursue that through the appropriate exemption. So thank you so much, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you for those answers. Reminder to our listeners this evening, if you'd like to ask a question of Dr. Lowe, Mayor Crombie, any of our panelists, please dial *3 on your phone keypad, and you'll be put into a queue. Those of you who are listening to the online feed this evening, you can use the question field on the screen to type in your question, and we'll read it out loud for you. Hayden submitted our next question, and Hayden asks, what if someone is not ready to get the vaccine?
Hayden, it's Mayor Crombie. We have to get you ready. So how about a little pep talk from Dr. Lowe or maybe Michelle DeManuel to share some of the stories from what's occurring in our hospitals. So the next vaccine is the best vaccine. We encourage you to protect yourself, your loved ones, your colleagues by getting the vaccine. Dr. Lowe, I think Hayden needs a little pep talk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And it's, you know, Hayden, I fully understand that a lot of people still have questions around the vaccines. You know, it's a new disease, it's a new vaccine product, and people are really just trying to find their way out during the midst of a very unusual time as well. I can reassure you that what has been approved, the vaccines that have been approved in Canada, they are safe, they are effective, as with any other, vaccine or intervention, there are obviously, on occasion side effects, but thankfully the side effects that have been identified with certain products are very rare, and the most common side effects tend to be very mild, tends to be things like a sore arm, tends to be like a mild fever. You may feel, a little tired or fatigued. That's your immune system doing the work to protect you. What's more scary, I think, than getting the vaccines, that's very clear in our community, is actually getting COVID-19. And we do know that for everyone who's eligible to get vaccinated, every day that you delay getting vaccinated increases the risk that you may be inoculated with this new virus for which your immune system has no protection for, and for which in some cases, some people will skate free and just have a very mild illness. But in other instances, they may very well result in having severe outcomes, hospitalizations, intensive care, ending up with our partners at Trillium for prolonged periods of time. So if you think about the risk of getting a new virus and rolling the dice versus mild side effects, very, very rare side effects that are not typically seen with all three products and not even typically seen with the one product that's been identified, I think the risk and benefit of vaccine versus risk of COVID becomes very clear. So I certainly encourage you to visit peelregion.ca/COVID-19vaccine to get all your questions answered around the vaccine, to build up your confidence. I know that for many people, especially if you're adults, you may not have had a vaccine for some time, although really we do still encourage people to get their flu shot on an annual basis. But it's been a while since you've gotten a needle, just know this. The sooner you get a vaccine, the sooner you'll have that protection. You'll be helping to protect those that you love and you live with, and you'll also be helping our community get back to normal in the quickest way possible. So thank you, and I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Thanks very much. Gary is on the line. He's live next, and he's got a question about, I'm going to call it COVID math. Go ahead, Gary.
Hello, everybody. I have a question to Dr. Law. A few days ago on the CCTV, there's an information bar. I read an info, which is confusing. It did say that with increased number of vaccinations, there's an increased number of COVID-19 cases. How is it possible? And the second part of the question is, of new daily cases of COVID-19, how many are asymptomatic? Thank you.
I'm going to kick this one off, if I may, because I know the answer to this one, at least partially. And Gary, the answer is because of the new variants. They are highly transmissible. They're more severe, and they're very dangerous. So we have cases that we have the virus that has mutated, and it has been brought over from the UK, originated in South Africa or in Brazil. And they're much more transmissible, these new variants, than the original virus was. And so that's why we see that this third wave is probably worse than the other two, as a matter of fact, because of the rise of these new variants. So Dr. Low, I know you'll want to comment on this as well.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you for the question. You're seeing things happen in parallel, and that's why I've been sitting here saying 75% first doses, 75% first doses, 75% first doses. Of course, we're trying to get our vaccine coverage up as quickly as possible, and at the same time, we're dealing with this significant third wave in our community. They're happening in parallel. And the reality is our vaccine coverage, while it is continuing to grow at 1% a day, and we're at 40%, we haven't got to that level, that magic level of 70 to 75% first doses where we have seen in other countries. Israel, for example, is now basically loosening all sorts of measures. They're at 75, 80% who have received at least one dose, and now 20, 25% who've received a second dose. Similarly, in the UK, they've reached that level as well. And so they're all starting to reopen. Unfortunately, our third wave and our vaccine campaign were happening in parallel at the same time, which explains what you were observing. And so I think it's absolutely vital to highlight that. It really speaks to what I've been saying all night, especially with all the vaccine that's coming in, all the capacity that we've built up together with Trillium, together with all of our community partners across the community. 18 plus in Peel, you can now start to get vaccinated. Living in a hotspot, you can book right now. If you are, in a non-hotspot, you can book us up tomorrow morning. the sooner we all get vaccinated, the sooner we get to that place where we actually start to control the virus and transmission in our community and hopefully reverse what we're seeing in our hospitals. To your question on asymptomatic, in general, the literature and our own data have shown that approximately 10% of cases tend to be asymptomatic or posi-symptomatic with very mild, you know, barely detectable symptoms. And I imagine that that continues to bear out with even the new cases that have been detected through the third wave. But it speaks, again, to the need for people to really stick to the measures to bring the third wave under control, to limit contacts, et cetera, hope that we get that decreasing trend and get this virus out of here, and then also to get vaccinated so that we get the coverage up to make sure that we completely avoid a fourth wave and that we try to ensure that we can gradually start to reopen with confidence, knowing that we won't look backwards. So thanks for the question. I'll pass back to Jody.
Thanks very much. Ofrain submitted the following question online. How soon can we expect to resume outdoor sports?
That's a very good question. We're hoping very, very soon we'd like to resume. We know that the guidance given by the Science Advisory Table is that the risk of transmission outdoors is very low, extremely low. And so we're hoping to see sports like basketball and soccer and baseball and tennis and even golf, for that matter, be reopened soon. I expect that once the province sees a downward decline in our case numbers, they'll be more willing to open up the outdoor activities and outdoor amenities. So, Dr. Lowe, do you have any more information on outdoor activities and when they may resume?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Madam Mayor. I don't have any more insight than anyone else, unfortunately, as to the discussions that are occurring at the provincial level. You know, we do remain under the stay-at-home order. We do have these restrictions that have been in place. We do know that some of them have certainly been revisited over time. Just given the severity of the third wave that we have right now, I think my focus is really on trying to encourage people to continue limiting your contacts as much as possible with people outside your home. And where possible and where you're eligible, which should be every adult in Peel, 18 plus, that's living in Peel, 18 plus, starting from tomorrow morning. Make sure you're getting your shot. And hopefully we can get to a point where we're getting out of all these different colors and measures and restrictions once we get to that 75% first dose and continuing to get to 75% two-dose herd immunity. So thanks, and I'll pass back to Jody.
Thanks very much. Karen is on the line, and Karen's got a question about the current stay-at-home order. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for taking my call. We're hearing during the comments that there is a targeted 75% vaccination rate for Peel. Today, Minister Elliott commented that no restrictions would be lifted for the province until the province had reached 75% vaccination level. Given that there are so many factors that can affect this, it would be really hopeful to know, is there a targeted end date, definitive end date, that we can focus on? We're hearing through the media that the stay-at-home order has actually been in effect since January, but in reality, Peel's been under some kind of stay-at-home gray lockdown for 10 of the last 13 months. So there's definite fatigue setting in, and it would be hopeful to be able to focus on a definitive end date. Can you comment on that?
Karen, I'm going to kick that one off, and of course I know that Dr. Lowe will want to comment as well, but we here in Peel have been in lockdown since November 23rd. It's been 6 or 7 months now. There has been actually no region in North America in lockdown longer than the region of Peel in the city of Toronto. I know that the targeted end date right now is May 20th. But, you know, that will be, May 20th, that will be reevaluated closer to that date to ensure that there is a downward decline. And so we have no information. You and I both know that the province makes that determination based on advice from the science table and the science advisors, so, and the medical officers of health, for that matter. So, Dr. Lowe, you are our medical officer of health. Do you have any more insight whether it's possible that the lockdown will be lifted? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you for the question. I wish I could provide an end date because it would make my life easier too. It'd be something that I'd be working towards. I'd be like, this is the date that I'm targeting and hopefully it'll end. Unfortunately, the virus is the virus and it is like any other natural disaster. you know, you can kind of guess or predict when, say, a snowstorm or a hurricane might blow over, but being able to predict exactly when it's going to happen, even in the midst of an emergency, is impossible. And because this is something that essentially we as human beings are the, you know, the drivers of this, disease, we are the ones that are spreading the virus, transmitting from person to person, it becomes a little bit more difficult, because as long as there are potential hosts for the virus to inoculate, there will be spread. So I think that's the first thing, is that it's impossible to provide an end date. However, like I've said throughout this call, there are signs for optimism and hope. We are starting to see this third wave curve. We've been here before. We know that we need to keep our feet on the gas, limit our interactions to try to get down the other side. I will certainly share that while we have been in quote-unquote lockdown for quite some time, the nature of our lockdown has not been as severe as some of the lockdowns seen in other countries, which were much more harsher and perhaps a little bit shorter, or even in the case of Melbourne, Australia, were much harsher and also just as long, 111 days. So, I think there's something to be said there for, I think we've still been able to get out and enjoy, parks, walks, hikes, runs around, whatever, making sure that there are still some little things here, even if it's not the full gamut of life that we're used to. But I think the broader point that I would make to this question is, it's impossible to nail down a date, but things are looking positive with our increasing vaccine coverage, vaccinating 1% a day from 40% right now, hoping to get to 75%, and hoping with all of you that we'll get there quicker and sooner if you all book your vaccines. And then, of course, with keeping our contacts and interactions under control, not necessarily loosening up the power or letting things slip, especially in this crucial period where we're just trying to get our case counts down to a point where the vaccines can really take hold and start to protect our community. So trends are promising. Things are looking good over the next few months. We know the weather is going to get better and there will be more opportunities to be outdoors as the case counts come down and the vaccine coverage goes up. And so while I can't give an exact date, I am very hopeful, knowing that that hope is very much resting in the hands of each and every one of us in the region of Peel. So thanks, and I'll pass it back to you, Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Monica is live with us on the line, and Monica has a question about mobile vaccinations. Go ahead, Monica.
Yes, good evening, Madam Mayor. My question is, I'm a senior. I have mobility issues, and I was wondering if there's going to be like a home mobile service, because I can't go out and farm the line to get my vaccine, and I phone Peel a couple of times and they tell me that it's not up and running yet. So my question is there going to be a home mobile service for seniors with mobility issues, and when will that be?
Monica, that is a question that many of our seniors who are homebound have been asking, and I believe there are about 9,000, and about a third of them have been vaccinated. That, I think that includes their caregivers, have been vaccinated to date. So we do have a program, and I think, Dr. Lowe, shall I ask Brian Landry to respond to this one? Because I think he may be leading up this program. Brian, over to you.
It would be Brian. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you for the question. Yes, so there's a couple of different options, Monica. If you are able to travel somewhat, we do have a TransHelp service from in the region where you can just phone with 48-hour notice and book a TransHelp vehicle to support you to get to a clinic for a scheduled appointment. So if that's an option, that's certainly something that we can set you up with. And the second is if you are in fact homebound and unable to move to a clinic or get out to we do have mobile teams. We're expanding that outreach. Like Mayor Crombie said, we have been out to about a third of those that we've have registered as being homebound, and a third of them and their essential caregiver supporters. So if there's four streams that we utilize to identify people, but if you call there's a line on the website. I'm sorry, I should have the number with me, but on a Peel website for registering, and we will definitely follow up and get you on that list and get to you as soon as possible. Thanks, Jody. Back to you.
Thank you, Brian. Our next question is from Valerie. Valerie's got a question about age eligibility for the vaccine. Valerie's live. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Yes, I have a child who is 17 years old, and I just need some clarification because the tweets in the press release are talking about 18 plus, and I've even heard on this phone call the reference to 18 plus. My daughter is 17 in grade 12, heading to university in the fall, but will not be 18 until December. I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to get her vaccinated starting tomorrow. I was prepared to get up and rolling on the website. And then I don't know if you have time for this also, but any idea about university resident / in-person classes in the fall? The first part of the question is the most important. Thank you so much, Dr. Lowe and Mayor Crombie.
Oh, thank you, Valerie, for calling in. So, Dr. Lowe, I'm going to let you respond. I thought that if they turned 18 in this year, they were eligible. Could you correct me if I'm mistaken? Please respond to Valerie.
Yeah, that's right, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Valerie. So it's born 2003. So if you are 18 or turning 18 this year, you are eligible to be vaccinated. In respect of the university question, you know, again, that will go to the table that the provincial table is looking at 12 to 17, which will cover off a lot of university-bound folk, certainly look forward to receiving their guidance on that. Brian, just confirming that I haven't misspoken or said anything wrong.
Thanks, Dr. Lowe. Yeah, so there's a little bit of a distinction here between the eligibility, which is the 18 plus, and then the type of vaccine that you get. So at this time, if it's a Pfizer vaccine, you can get that because it's the monograph or the instructions on that vaccine are that you could receive it if you turn 18 this year. But if it's a Moderna vaccine, you actually have to be 18 at the time that you receive the vaccine. Now, as we've talked about earlier this evening, there's lots of conversation going on about Pfizer and younger age groups. So I expect that over the next short while, there will be provincial direction that lowers that age limit. So probably, and don't want to misspeak, but it looks like wheels are in motion and lots of conversation in the science tables looking at how that age limit can be dropped probably well in advance of returning to university. Thanks, Jody. Back to you.
Thanks very much, Brian. We're coming to the end of our time together this evening. We've had so many important questions and robust conversation tonight. Mayor Crombie, do you have any closing thoughts to share with our audience tonight?
Yes, indeed, Jody. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening and for all your very thoughtful questions. I know we're all anxious to get back to life as normal. And what's clear is that we're getting closer and closer every day to that reality. These next few weeks are going to be critical as we get more and more people vaccinated, and at a rate of about 1% per day, according to Dr. Lowe. That's great news indeed. And so I'm urging everyone to book an appointment and to get their vaccine as soon as possible. I want to thank everyone in Mississauga who continues to follow public health guidelines and make huge sacrifices for the collective good. And I want to thank everyone who joined us on the call tonight, including our panelists who have taken time off the front lines to answer your questions. I also want to thank the City of Mississauga staff and my city councillors who joined us this evening. We will continue to provide you with updates on our progress of the vaccination rollout. Better days are ahead, Mississauga. Be confident, but please continue to be kind, think of others, and stay safe. Good night, Mississauga, and thank you.